I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
I just need to give you a quick warning that the following podcast does touch on trauma and sexual abuse, and there may be some bad language as well, so take care with your listening, please.
No mai hoki mai to It's Personal with me, Anika Moore. This is a podcast where I get personal with really, really, really interesting people. Know what I'm saying?
We are sometimes domestically our own worst enemy in terms of our progress. If people around the world, like him and others, and Disney, can see the value in revitalising a beautiful Indigenous language, then why can't we? And that's a challenge that we need to give to our own people here.
Now, I've been through my share of trauma, believe me. And I fully believe the most interesting and inspiring people have often been broken and had to rebuild. Chelsea Wynn Stanley, oh, she's a sis, has rebuilt many times over. She's an award-winning producer and the first Indigenous film producer to be nominated for an Academy Award. You go, girl. She's also just super cool. Okay, so what I want to know, what are you working on right now? What's your mahi in this precise time?
So I'm finishing a documentary that I came home to make in 2020.
Yeah.
Which sounds crazy, but storytelling needs to take the time it takes. So this has been good for me because I have to get back into that space, which I love. That's another thing I've actually really enjoyed about coming home, is returning to the things that I want to do and be in charge of and in charge of creatively.
What's the documentary about?
Well, I came home in 2020. There was an amazing exhibition up at the Auckland City Art Gallery, Toi o Tamaki, called Toi Tu Toi Ora. Mm-hmm. And it was basically a takeover of contemporary Māori art in that space.
That.
And that place has never held and given so much mana to contemporary Māori art before. So for me, it was curated by Māori. It was all Māori. It was just like, wow, what a celebration. So I wanted to come home and document that, the process behind the scenes and how you put something like that together, follow some of the artists that were making some of the work.
Amazing.
And then all that shit went down.
Oh,
well, the curator of the show, he resigned. There was a bit of fuffi going on.
Why?
I mean, well, it's just a classic. You know, that institution in and of itself is a very colonial institution, like most of those art institutions
much like
are.
The Crown and the Beehive and the government.
Look at all those places, yeah. You know. And they exist for, you know, the reason, one of the reasons why that place even came to being, Governor Gray thought they were like spaces that could basically, you know, to anglicise this part of the world. Like literally those are his kind of words. Mm-hmm. And they did a fucking great job at it, you know. And mm-hmm. and the process of colonisation has done exactly what it was meant to do. Disenfranchise Māori, mm-hmm. take away yep. their rangatiratanga, all those things. And I mean, it's just resurfacing all the time. And we have a treaty because it was a founding document to create a partnership in a relationship, and the fact that we have to keep going back and referring to that is because there's been breaches of it.
Yeah,
just go back and listen to the amazing kōrero of Moana Jackson to just have a very you know, his delivery is so peaceful and considered. Mm-hmm. And I get a bit racked up.
I do too,
you know. And so, like, ah, so then we're considered to be, oh, you crazy Maori's, like,
yeah, so stop being so bloody emotional.
Yeah but we have, there's legitimate grounds to be pissed off right now.
Yep, you know? I agree.
And with this current government, we are going to possibly regress into just a really dire situation. So it's important that we're just super vigilant, keep pushing, be unapologetically proud to be Māori, kōrero Māori, just mm-hmm. celebrate being Māori because it's beautiful.
So you started Matewa named after your daughter.
Well, is it? Not really. And she probably thinks that, like, sees the posters with her name at Matua Media. Wow.
Mm-hmm, that's me.
Matua, she has the name of her grandmother. And she has both of our grandmothers, actually. Matua and Kiritapu is my grandmother, and Matua is her dad's mother. Okay. Grandmother, sorry. So she has a combination of both our names. And then when Tweedy and I got together back in 2016, when we were talking about doing Moana Reo Māori, we needed a name for the company. I don't know, when you're coming up with a name, you just kind of put a few things out there. And
that started.
Yeah, that stuck.
My question to you is, why Disney? Why translating Disney instead of, like, I don't know, Leonardo DiCaprio movie or a da-da-da-da-da movie or a bit-a-bit-a movie?
Yeah. You know, animation. Animation is the easiest. Well, it's easier than live action because it's really hard to get the...
I know, because when I watch Korean movies, it's like...
And it can just throw you out, eh?
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, not just that. I mean, animation as the way in which to tell the easiest story in another language, because you're not always focused so much, on the wahangu.
Yeah.
But the other thing about Disney is, why not? Like, I think if we want to make an impact or a change with our language in this country, we need to go to and work with the biggest global giant.
And that's what
of the entertainment industry.
So you and Tweedy went over there and went into the office of Disney and were like, hey, bros, can we get out at this translator to Māori, bro?
We had a conversation first with with the people that run the international voices, because Disney is a massive machine. They are just huge. And there's so many different divisions. So we had a phone call with the person who kind of, he's not there anymore, but he ran basically international voices. So you can imagine there's, you know, many, many voices that they do around the world. At the time, they didn't really think that we were kind of probably serious or really had a plan or nothing. And we actually didn't really have too much of a plan. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. Yeah. One night we were having dinner and we just, you know, got out those chalk pen things and wrote on the windows. We were like, what would it look like if we wanted to contribute? What kind of contribution could we make towards Te Reo Māori for our kids, for our mokopuna, for our babies in the future, whatever, you know? And what do we do in our lives daily that we could and enhance that? So, okay, we work in this industry. Why not? What would it look like if we were to translate, if we were to just take product in our sphere and what we do and put that into Te Reo Māori and put it in public places? Because I think that's the problem. One of the things we face and challenge is that we're always kind of pigeonholed, you know, and I love whakata Māori and I love all the things that we have in our spaces for us.
Yeah.
But it means we're also, it's easy for non-Māori to say, oh, there you go, you have your thing over there,
your Māori
and
festival.
Not to engage.
Yeah.
Whereas we were like, nah, we need to be in big public spaces, and the way we can get our product into big public spaces is to go into cinema. So how do we do this? We work with people like Disney, because everyone loves a Disney film.
Oh,
well, not
gosh,
everyone.
Yes.
But our babies, they just intrinsically love that
our
product.
Our kids watch them for, like,
watch them.
They
every
love
day. The singing.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It's a whānau focus film too. You know, a lot of their product is whānau. So
that's
again how you capture intergenerational change with language. You have to capture many different reanga, different generations. So we're like, perfect, ping, 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 let's go for them. The way we got into the Disney space is, well, we knew what we wanted to do. Let's attack them first. Not attack them. But Moana had just come out as well. So it was like, perfect. It's a Pacific story.
Yep.
Maui, we share all these things. Like, this would be the perfect one to go out with. At the time, Taika was editing Thor. So he's on the Disney lot. I said to him, give me the person who can, I don't know, I need to make a connection with Disney Moana. Da, 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 da. This is what Tweedy and I are thinking of doing. He didn't really have anyone we could specifically talk to, but gave us, like, the intern of someone else. She was a young Hawaiian woman, Kaleko. So then I started talking to Kaleko, and I was like, Kaleko, we want to translate Moana into our indigenous language. Who can we start talking to? She put us on to Osnat, who was one of the producers, who then put us on to Rick.
Mean.
The guy in charge of international voices.
Yeah.
So at that point, we're talking to Rick, and he's, like, asking all these kind of questions. We'd never done reversioning before. We didn't even know what the hell we were talking about. The budget, all the things. Yeah, we've got the money. Had no money. We had nothing. But we were just winging our way, because all we needed was, give us the material, we'll work it out later. To the point where And bless Larry Pa from Te Māngai Pāho, because if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have got this over the line either. We just pitched it to him. He knew what we were trying to do. He knew the reasons why. And he was like, we'll make this work.
They gave you the money to...
Not all of it. Like, he went around, we got some money from Te Punu Kōkiri and Te Tauawhiri Te Reo Māori. So those three agencies supported us in that first project to do Moana Reo Māori. For not much money, to be fair, right? So a whole lot of love went into that project. Okay. We didn't have the money yet, and so I get on a plane and go to LA, because we decided to move over there at that point, take the kids over.
Yeah.
And so they were like, yeah, yeah, Chelsea, come into this, you know, in the studio, and we'll talk about the project. We're like, okay, sweet, but we're already translating, so fucking hell. We're already like, thinking we've got the gig. Yeah. And so I walk into this, into the Disney studio lot, just thinking it was probably going to be me, Rick, and one other. Oh my shit, me tit the bed. This is like a whole big boardroom table with about 10 people. And I'm like, woo! And then just basically winged it, presented a kind of budget, which they had a couple of questions on. And I was like, oh my God, yeah. Trying to, you know, answer them as best I could. And then from that and the pitch document, then they were like, oh, no, this sounds great. Okay.
Wow.
Like, they honestly...
Well, what do they have to do? Like, do they put in money? Do they put in advertising? They just...
Absolutely. No, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say nothing.
Well, they give you the
They allowed the us. Yes. They allowed us
to
do it. We don't own anything, and that was never our... It was never our objective to try and make big bucks out of this. And I think that's the biggest thing you can ever do in anything you do in life. Whatever your intention is from the beginning, maintain that all the way through.
Yeah.
So that the product, whatever you end up making, is always true to that initial intention.
Yeah.
We didn't do this to make heaps of bucks. It was literally to put our language in the biggest spaces we possibly could to say we are here. Now, babies deserve to go to the cinema and hear their language.
And you've done it.
Because no one was providing that for them.
No, not at all.
So, yeah, we did that. And then we came back a few years later and said, you know, it was such a success. And we gave them a little wrap-up document and kind of thing. And everyone was coming to us at that point going, we want more. And so we were like, fuck it, let's see if we can get more. And so another conversation. And we were like, this time we'd like to do some more and more maybe current films.
Yeah.
More films that our babies are like, into now, or a bit of a mix. We had a bit of a plan. We wanted to do different mita and things like that, different dialects.
Yeah.
And, you know, bless them, America, they were like, oh my God, you Maoris know what you're doing? Like, because they were blown away by quality, the caliber, the production values, everything. They had no idea of what Tweedy and Rob and Silla and Petty were going to deliver. And they've just... Honestly, every time we send through the next, you know, auditions, or because they do still maintain they have to sign off the final talent.
Yeah.
But they're just blown away. They honestly can't believe it.
So what have you done so far, Coco?
So we've done Moana, Lion King, Frozen, Koko, and we'll do Encanto next year.
Yeah. How proud do you feel for having this achievement? Because it's huge. It's huge for Te Ao Māori.
Yeah, I think, you know, Tweed and I talk about it, and it's kind of the impact you don't really see immediately, but you'll see after.
Mm-hmm.
And also when you're in the thick of it too, you're just like, you're doing it. But it's when the babies are just singing. Or it's when kids think that Lion King was always in Te Reo Māori, because why would they know anything else?
Yeah.
It's when you can get Sir Elton John to agree to let you voice over the, you know, the end credit song, Can You Feel the Love Tonight? No other language in the world has ever done that. So when we approached Disney, we were like, hey, there's one track missing, like the stems we need for the final end credit song. And they were like...
That's Elton Johnson.
They were like, oh, no. That's, you know, OV, original voice. Elton has that on every single language around the world.
Oh, wow.
We were like, what? Shit, no. Because we've already cast for that. You know, we'd already cast Stan. We were like, we already had it. We already knew what we were going to do.
Wow.
We're like, nah, that doesn't work. We can't have this beautiful film all in Te Reo Māori and then all of a sudden have to hear Elton. I mean, bless, we love you, Elton.
We love
but,
her.
That would just be kind of... a bit weird. So we were like, Cool, thanks, Disney. And then just went about going about our own way and getting in touch with him and doing a little mihi to him, video showing him what we were doing, explaining what the kaupapa was, and we got it over the line. So it just goes to show, you know, we are sometimes domestically our own worst enemy in terms of our progress. Mm. If people around the world like him and others and Disney can see the value in revitalising a beautiful Indigenous language, then why can't we? And that's a challenge that we need to give to our own people here in Aotearoa New Zealand, mm-hmm. Pākehā mā, Māori mā, whoever it might be that have some kind of adverse reaction to having two languages here.
Well, you're shoving it down our throat, that's why.
Oh, apparently.
Chelsea, honest, I want to ask you about your upbringing. Well, no, more like the... You had a baby at a young age, even though 21's not that young, is it?
Well, at 20, I was like 10 days shy of my 21st. Half a can of beer, I think, for my 21st.
Jesus. Woo! But you want to start there because, you know, you've made it from there, being a solo mum, to now having an amazing production company, beautiful children, a successful life. You know, you're on the benefit, the DPB they used to...
Yep.
DPB,
yep,
they used
DPB,
to call it. My mum was on the DPB too. Every Tuesday we'd walk to the supermarket and she'd get her money out and we'd get our groceries and then if it was a flash week, we'd taxi home. Because we were poor. We couldn't afford chocolate. Yep. We couldn't afford nothing. Remember at Woolworths they used to have free buns and fruit? So you'd get the buns.
I thought that was only a recent Auckland thing or something. I never saw
in
that.
Christchurch they used to, and I'd be like,
wow.
Get those buns in, like, because it's
I
like
grew up
they're
in the
free.
Mount.
Oh, okay. So anyway, you're on the DPB,
having a hooer of a time.
Having a hooer of the time, but you were determined to study.
Yeah.
To study your what were you studying?
Me and another solo mum, in the Mount, who I knew from growing up. We just both knew that we just wanted to, I suppose when you have kids, you're like, I have an, what Merita says, when you have children, you have an investment in the future.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, and also I didn't want to, it's a humiliating space to be in, that DPB. You feel heaps of whakamā shame mm-hmm. that you're, you know, taking taxpayers' money so you can feed your kid.
Or dole bludging,
or whatever it is, eh?
Yeah.
And that's not a good space to be in. It's not the right motivation for you to want to go back and study.
Yeah.
For you to feel shame. It should be more like, I want to further my education I wanted to build a life for my son, I suppose, or, you know.
How did you get out of it? Did you just, you and your mate just head down?
So she was a solo mum too, so we were both like solo mums living together, basically leles, which you could
Relate to. Yeah, hard out. I was like, solo mums living together, all right. wink, nudge, nudge.
She had two boys, I had my little one. They were all just little things, and we'd take our babies off to the kohanga before mm-hmm. uni, and we were both studying communications.
Yeah.
And then I had a shitty car accident. Because I
was
trying
my
to.
Next question.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I didn't even finish out that year because I was trying to come back to. So I grew up in the Mount. My whānau live in where I come from. My Māori whakapapa is a little place called Te Puna. So I would try and drive over the Kaimais, which is from Hamilton to basically home, because I wanted to do Te Reo Māori. And I didn't want to just learn it at Waikato University. I thought, I want to go home and learn it. And so they were having it in the Hauora Centre. So I was coming over the Kaimais during the week, and it's pretty icy and dicey during the winter months. Anyway, I just far out. I had a car accident, lost control of the car, smashed everything up, and I was out of uni, out of action, learn how to walk again, all the things. Broken legs, broken face, broken everything. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have scars on your face still?
Yeah, under my mouth I smashed that. Broken nose.
Have you got false teeth?
No.
You say kept all your teeth?
Kept all my teeth, yeah.
What was it like having to walk again?
Painful. I spent maybe like a month in hospital, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was an interesting time because my parents then had to like rally together. You know, my actual parents had been separated and divorced forever, and all of a sudden they were having to come together and live in the same house. Fuck.
Oh, to look after you.
Where my baby? Because my boy was only two.
Wow.
So... they really had to help out. It's hilarious when I think about it now, you know.
Well, they did it for you because they love you.
Oh.
Are you the only...
Kia ora, mum and dad.
Are you the only child?
No, I have an older brother, older sister.
Oh, so only three?
Yeah.
Only three.
Only three.
Bloody hell.
Well, my mum lost a baby,
actually.
I don't know. In between. Well, I don't know for her. Yeah. I don't know if your mother's like this or... But my mum... like kept heaps of her trauma to herself, you know. And I think, and when you do become a mother and you think, fuck, if I had lost a baby, her baby was a couple months old and had a heart defect and just like devastating, But she just kind of, I don't know, that generation just held on to their mamai so hard.
You had to. You were forced to mask your mamai.
Yeah.
So you're studying communications. What's communications?
Well, because I wanted to make documentaries.
Okay. That's so that was your passion.
Yep. And I got my first job out of uni with Rhonda Kite and Libby Hakaraya.
At
Kiwa.
So you get your first gig, and then you just shoot for the stars.
Well, because it was an affirmation too, like seeing two Māori women owning their own business. And producing content that was really about uplifting and celebrating Māori or challenging and dealing with issues te ao Māori. So for me, I was like, you can be successful in this space and own your own stories. And it was great because I got to just keep doing the directing stuff, which is really what I liked to do and wanted to do. And then Libby gets hapu. And we need a producer. So I kind of stepped into that role.
Okay.
Unwillingly, well, I didn't really know what it was or how to do it, so just kind of learnt along the way. I mean, great. You know, Whakaata Māori had just started too, so all these opportunities for a lot of us to just test the waters, have a go, have a tutu, make content. We were making this really cool little art series called Ki Te Aranui, which was just little stories, like 8-minute profiles on Māori artists around the country, like... Awesome.
That's really cool.
Like, what an archive to make, you know?
So that's kind of like your ladder, eh?
Yeah.
Your ladder to some of the bigger things that you're working on. You worked on Wadu?
Yep, I worked on Wadu, yes, as a director, which was really nice to come back again into that space because I spent a lot of time then in the producing world and I got a little bit over it by the time I'm not done with it, but I've learnt a lot of good stuff from it. And I think it's probably, hopefully, only going to make me a better director because I know what's involved in making something.
And that's your passion, directing.
Yeah, you know, if I'm really to be super honest, and sometimes it's really hard to be honest in that space because it's like, fuck, I'm putting myself out there.
You always go, maybe. Hey.
Yeah, or everything, you know, when you're directing something, it's all on you.
Yeah.
There's nothing to fall back on or... as a producer, you're there to toe-tackle the whole project and you're just doing your bit to make sure it can come to fruition. And it's a lot because you're involved in something often from the very beginning to the very end and you're kind of carrying and making sure it gets delivered.
Can I ask you a bit of a personal question in the sense of, because I want to understand, you're doing this mahi, you're loving it, proud, then you have another baby and then you have another baby and that
Round
slows you
two,
down.
Yeah.
And you have to have a backseat
while
your partner is doing his thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, okay. Like if that was me, of course we are nurturers when we have our babies, we're nurturers, we want to stay home with our babies, we want to slow down, but we also want to do our mahi.
Yeah.
Like, how was that for you in your heart? Like, were you okay with it? Did it sit okay with you? Or were you just like, oh, for fuck's sakes, move over?
To be really brutally honest, I... probably started forming a little bit of regret at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, not regret. That's not fair because I don't regret having my children. No. Probably a little bit of resentment at that moment because, you know, you don't make something. You don't make a human being on your own.
Well said.
therefore, you shouldn't have to raise a human being on your own either.
Yeah.
So when that kind of little seed of resentment was starting to form, I want to be really honest and own my participation in that and maybe the unravelling of our relationship because I didn't want to be the dutiful wife and race over to the Gold Coast where he was making Thor and sit in an apartment all day long, fucking twiddling my thumbs while he was on set, and bring the kids out
for their show and tell, and tuck them back in.
Yep. And I mean, lots of other wives do that, and you know, in other departments, and they'll dutifully do that thing. But I couldn't think of anything fucking worse. To go to the Gold Coast, I'm sorry, that place is
you go, girl.
Anyway.
No, no, it smells.
And just do nothing, you know? And I knew, and also that would mean I have to take my babies out of Kohanga Reo. Mm-hmm. And that to me was really important. So I said, I'm not going to do that, but we'll come over and visit. That probably was the beginning of the unraveling.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't that pandering, dutiful, get on my knees and whatever you want. Someone else was, though.
We all know guilt.
Yeah. So,
you heard it here first.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I mean, I didn't fucking know any of that until many, many years later.
Yeah. So you're...
Oh, so a little bit of like, and probably my stubbornness in that moment. Mm-hmm. I'm not, because I'm not that. I am my own person and I want to do my own things. And I'm glad I actually did, because I did wadu. While all that was happening.
Yeah.
Merata. Yep. I did Merata's film with Hepi and Cliff, which was, again, that's true to me. That's that those projects and those that type of storytelling, that's me. Yeah. That's got nothing to do with what was going on in that space.
Your other things.
Yeah. And so, and thank my tupuna, whatever, whoever was kind of looking after me in that moment, because I think, you know, I probably needed that. I needed to focus on my own stuff because it reaffirmed for me that I can do that. I don't need anyone else for me to be able to be happy and control or do what I want to do in the spaces that I love doing.
That's what I realised. You don't need a partner. Yeah. You don't need someone next to you. You can do it yourself.
You can do it yourself. It's nice to have someone who can support you and just like
pick up the kids when you're running over.
Yep, those things. Or just to go, you got this, or, you know, like, I'm so proud of you. But there was never any of that. There's no interest in what I wanted to be doing. So that said volumes, really.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you know how. Oh, God, I want to say so much shit, Chelsea.
Should we save that for the book?
Yeah. Oh, are you going to do a book?
Nah, fuck, I don't know.
Basically, you were married to someone who didn't support you and your wants and needs. If we may be so bold.
I think I was married to someone who really was just on their own buzz.
Right.
And, like, tunnel vision. For whatever reasons, you know? And we're all on our own journey as far as I'm concerned. So to help me get me through on a daily basis, I just remind myself I'm not responsible for what anybody does. I'm only responsible for the way in which I react to that. And so I therefore to try not take anything too personally, because at the time you just get stuck in that space.
Yeah. I know all about that victim.
Yeah.
But it's not even you're a victim, you're just angry with what they've done to you.
It is that, but I think as time goes by, you're actually angry at yourself for not believing that you deserved better.
Yeah, or standing up for yourself.
Yep, because I remember having the most incredible lunch with this amazing woman in New York a few years ago. And we were just talking about things that you've endured and all the things. And she was talking about her childhood and da 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 da. And she said, you know what I've realised? She was, you know, reaching 70. She was like, what I think I've done based on, you know, my own childhood trauma, and I believe that to a lot of our stuff, the way we present ourselves in the world, the way we just navigate space, comes from a lot of childhood trauma. And so she was saying, you know, what I've realised is, so long as what I was doing wasn't as bad as that, the childhood trauma, it was okay. And what I've realised is I was just upgrading my abuse. And I was like, fuck, penny drop. Oh, my God. So long as for me in my situation, so long as it, what I was putting myself through wasn't as bad as the childhood rape, then it basically I could handle it. But what I didn't realise what I was doing was just upgrading the abuse.
Wow. That's like some multi-level parallel shit right there.
Yeah. And so it's a good reminder that, you know, you can change that narrative at any point as well.
Mm. And I read, you know, because you do talk about being sexually abused when you were younger, like child or teenage or...
Child, yeah.
And a lot of people keep those things to themselves because of they feel shame or, you know, they think they're disgusting.
Yeah.
They haven't learned to forgive themselves yet for letting it happen. Mm. And why do you speak out? What's your kaupapa? What's your, like, is it just the truth? You just want to get the truth out.
That too, and it's really damaging, I think. But also learning to forgive yourself. Because I think if you form a basis of who you are based on that, based on, you know, I've done heaps of work on this. If you're forming the basis of who you are based on being a sexualized person to men, if you like, and then that's all you are. That's all you are. Because in your childhood, in your childlike mind, that's all you are, an object of desire. And then that's your almost your currency. It becomes your currency. Because no one's telling you that you're smart. No one's telling you that you're intelligent or anything else. You're just a thing to be used and essentially abused.
Poked and prodded.
Yep. And all the things. So then that's what you form is your sense of self-worth. That's all you are.
Yeah.
So you have to unravel that and unpack that throughout your life. And you might make some really shitty mistakes and decisions based on that, if that's what you think you are. So you have to then go through your life forgiving yourself for maybe situations you've put yourself in. Like I've put myself in harm's way.
Yep.
And I've had to then go back throughout my life and not feel disgusted and gross about those choices I made, but forgive myself because they're based on things that I grew up thinking that's all I was worth.
But how dare they make us go through so much shit in our adulthood? How dare they get that power over us where we have to spend hours and hours de-traumatising ourselves and learning to love ourselves?
Yeah. Like, it's quite crazy. It's almost like colonisation. Like, it puts you on pause.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're in that trauma state.
You are
like,
still five. Yeah. You've still got the mind of a five-year-old.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you talk about it, because there's so many people who will hear that and go, oh, God, that's what happened to me, and I can't believe it, and now I have to do my healing.
Yeah.
My healing.
And healing's cool, man. Healing is freedom. Healing is freedom.
You haven't drunk for 4 years, 5 years?
Almost six.
Have you relapsed?
Nah.
Wow.
I know. I smell it every now and again, because I'm just interested. I was like, oh, what does that smell like? Like red wine or something.
You used to love drinking.
I used to, yeah. I was a happy ass drunk. I loved it. I loved
so
it.
So am I.
I did, honestly. And I loved the feeling and the vibe. But the reason why I stopped is because when all the shit was going down in my marriage and it was ending, the drinking was leading to really unhealthy other habits and other things, other drugs and all the things. And
really?
And I just knew.
Cocaine.
Oh, yep, all the things. I knew that in order for me to truly, and stop repeating mistakes, like, why am I putting myself in harm's way? Why do I not believe that I'm worthy of a much better partner or whatever it might be, or putting myself first in my career, or speaking up for myself, or whatever it might be. So I don't want to do that ever again in my life. I don't want to give my power over to someone else. Again, linking that back to childhood trauma, like literally giving myself away because I didn't know anything else. So I'm not going to do that anymore. What can I do to ensure that I'm not going to make those mistakes or put myself in harm's way? I knew that drinking was just a catalyst to other things.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, just stop. Just stop that so I don't have to then be tempted by other things. And it was literally like, I just don't want to keep repeating the same shit.
What about for people who are surrounded by alcohol with their whānau members who want to stop drinking? Like, how would you give them advice to getting the help so that they're not repeating trauma.
Yeah.
Like, that's a, you know, we know garage parties.
Yeah.
We know around the table drinking. That's how I was brought up.
Yeah.
How do you get away from that?
Yeah. I think it's like with anything, you've got to really want to do it. Because it's so easy to be in those situations again and just, I'll just have one. Or one doesn't really count. But then just say to yourself, but what does one lead to?
Two bottles. For me, it's
and just back to hating on yourself and all the things. Like, you have to really just want to get out of whatever it is, the yuck, the mamai, the thing. If you really want to get out of that, then that's what you have to do. You have to give yourself the permission and the power to do it.
Do you think that stopping drinking helped heal you, and then did it help you reclaim your te reo Māori? Because was that the path you were going on? Because you went to Takiuta, you moved back to New Zealand, your kids are in an amazing school, they're doing their reo, and then you're like, okay, my turn.
To do the reo?
Yeah, like...
Yeah, because I tried to do night classes and all the things, and my brain just doesn't retain 1 2-hour class
a week.
I've
tried all of that.
Because you have to, and that's for me, that's the truth, and for you, that's the truth. For many people, it is, because... And even going to Takiura, it was super hard, but beautiful environment to be speaking te reo Māori. And in that space, you know, like my kids were doing, you were kind of mirroring a school environment, Monday to Friday, 9 to 3 kind of vibe. But when you're outside of that space, kei hea te wāhi haumaru, kei te kōrero Māori, where are the safe spaces that you can go to speak Māori? And it becomes very clear when you leave that school that this is Te Ao Pākehā.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We do not really, as much as we purport overseas and we're like, oh, our race relations, bullshit, or we're bilingual, rubbish. We're not, because we're not supporting people who are wanting to maintain reo Māori in public spaces. Slowly but surely, you know, we'll see bilingual signs and things, and now, hello, we have a government that wants to literally reverse all that. What are they so afraid of? I don't understand. And I really have never had a succinct answer to what is the fear of having te reo Māori visible, audible in every space we walk on this whenua. I just do not understand.
Is it the fear of the unknown and also just outright racism?
Yep. And
wouldn't that just be the answer? Outright racism.
Outright racism, yep. And fear that maybe Māori what are going to do what the original settlers did to us. Doubt it. We're cooler, man. We're not going to, like, take your shit off you because we're cooler.
We'll give you...
We wouldn't do that.
We'll give you some Māori earrings for some land.
Hey, but don't worry. Keep doing the haka before the rugby overseas in those English pubs. Yeah. Like, come on, come on.
They might turn... Imagine if they turned the haka into English. Just a bunch of Māoris doing English. Oh, with your hairy tiki. Like, yeah, let's say that.
With your hairy tiki.
Right. Hairy tiki means hairy vagina, by the way, guys, if you don't understand Māori.
Aroha Māori.
What was it like living in LA?
It's a really hard place.
How?
Like, you see so many homeless people, so many poor people, so many people who ain't living the dream. Like, there's a level of reality in that place that's quite dark.
Okay.
And it's not that nice. So when you go and visit and you see all the glam and the glitz and you're Hollywood Boulevard and you're going to some parties and, whoa, all the people are amazing and da-da-da, that's cool. That's one really small part of it. And not many people even attain that, you know. And then the other level of it is really quite sad and dark, and they don't care about their Indigenous communities there. Look what happened with Black Lives Matter, you know. People are getting killed there.
Okay, you're not selling me this place.
Yeah, sorry.
I really love LA and I love the idea of it.
Keep loving it. Keep loving it, because there are pockets that are really cool.
I've lived there from time to time.
Yep. Well, there you go.
But I was being wooed by a record company who had millions and who would pick me up in limos.
Yes.
And I was staying at 5-star hotels and, you know, everyone was smiling lots.
Yep.
Because like,
they're all like, we're making so much money out of you. We could be. This is so great. And you're like, wow, you really like me.
I didn't care if they liked me. I just was offered so much cocaine, but I never took it because I didn't do drugs.
Okay, cool.
And then I eventually caved in.
I don't know. And maybe I have that feeling towards it because also shit went down for me in that place. So I don't have a great memory of it.
Alcohol,
I don't have,
drugs.
Oh, no, the end of my marriage, everything.
Okay.
Like it was not, it's not a place that I have heaps of really cool, great memories.
Yeah.
I found pockets of fun and pockets of joy.
Yeah.
But it was superseded by some pretty unhappy memories.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came home, my heart was full because this is where I belong. This is the work that I want to do. These are the people that I want to be around and be with. This is where I can make the most impact. I'm not over there.
Yeah.
That's not my place to make an impact.
So that's your dream, is pursuing your passion in directing, have your daughters grow up in Te Ao Māori.
Yeah.
How is your reo now? Like, are you, when you were doing Takira, was it hard to say, kia ora ko Chelsea toku ingoa?
Everyone is crying. It is like therapy 101, like go back to the beginning and just get it all out. Because you're all there feeling shit about yourselves that you don't know te reo Māori yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm nearing 50 and I went there with other mates, so it's so good to go with other friends because mm-hmm. you're all just sitting in this crazy trauma together. Like, you, and it's beautiful. You have, you know, a few young people in there, but the majority of the students are like middle-aged mm-hmm. and we're really fucking upset and sad that we don't have our reo, that we didn't grow up. Kore te puaki te reo Māori. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up with it. Having to find it later and trying to learn it, hear it, understand it, you just feel like a dummy. Like, but because you're going through it all together, you're all just feeling stupid together. So that's fine, and you're getting up. You know, after like the first, I think it's the week six or something, you have to get up and speak I te reo Māori for 6 minutes, and then it gets incrementally gets more and more and more until your final whakapuaki, you have to get up and speak for an hour.
And do you have to listen to everyone speak?
Yes. Oh. And you're all crying. Okay. You would love it because...
I don't have patience to listen
You
to
would, though.
Would I?
Yes, because you have been... You feel so much pride for your fellow
That's,
mates,
that's
your tauira. That's how you get through, and you put your little selfish fucking little taonga to the side.
ADHD, Chelsea.
Oh, shut up. Take a pill for that.
I have. I had to take two today for you.
No, all the
so
things.
It's worth it.
All the meds. Take all the meds.
I love that.
No, it's fully worth it. Like, if that's something that's important to you.
I'm 2025, but I've got to save up next year so I can afford my mortgage when I'm doing it in 2025.
And see, that's a fucked thing, eh? Like, that we have to, we become economically strained because we are trying to retain something that should have been. You should have had it from birth. I mean, look at anything overseas. Overseas, where in countries in Europe where they speak 2, 3, 4 different languages, it's actually good for the brain. Like, I'm sorry, but when we went to school, you had the option of maybe learning French or German at high school or something.
I remember that.
I mean, I only did it because at sixth form we got to go on a trip.
Same.
So I didn't do it because I wanted to learn French.
Je m'appelle Annika.
What?
What?
Tiari. Hey, all those tapes. Oh.
What was it?
Carré.
Carré.
Ouais,
c'est quoi, habite? Habite re.
What?
Re. I can't do it. Are you happy now? Are you content? Is that what, or do you have that fire burning in you to do more and more and more and more and more for Te Reo Māori, for Te Ao Māori, for filmmakers?
Yeah. I think probably the desire is more than the capacity I have. So I recently got involved with distribution and theatrical spaces, cinema, because for me, I've always thought we're not going to have control of our story sovereignty until we participate in every single part of that filmmaking process. So producing and the production side of things, fine. A lot of us have got that down. We're really good at that. But we haven't participated in distribution or cinema. And those places have so much power. They have so much weight.
Of course they do.
Because if you want to make a film, you want to get some money from the Film Commission, they're not going to give it to you until you have a distributor to say, yep, I'll show your film. That distributor has so much weight and power in the room. Now, you imagine, who are the distributors out there? They're just most of them are old white dudes, mm-hmm. and most of the bigger ones here that we have to interact with are Australian owned.
Okay.
So how many of our stories have not been made, told or seen because they're like this, oh, I don't really see an audience for that. I mean, that was the same reaction we were getting when we were doing our Te Reo Māori Disney stuff. The exhibitors, you know, the hoits and the events and the whatevers, oh, don't know about that. Now they are amping. We have proven to them there is an audience that exists.
Yep.
We make you money. And as soon as you talk money and dollars, they don't get it all day, every day. They're like, when's the next one coming? When's the next one coming?
Wow.
We have got people going to their cinemas now during the week when they wouldn't have any, you know, people going. So it's just that classic, you literally have to put it on a plate in front of people, eh? They won't believe you until you can show it to them. So for me, at the moment, it's about that, having full participation, because I'm sick of us as women, especially. I don't care what colour or ethnicity we are, but we don't have an equal level playing field in that space of storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then look at the success of things like Barbie, not that we're making a massive, you know, that type of film, but told by woman, it's a woman's story, it's all the things, unapologetically having a go at the patriarchy, all the things. And it smashes the box office. We are 50% of the population. We have stories. We deserve to see them and hear them. I'm sure if you've got a story you want to tell about leles and all the things and leles. Vaginas, then there'll be heaps of people that want to go and see
well,
it.
You put it in your cinema, the Lele movie by
right.
Nick Amor.
Lickety splits. Like,
scissor cook.
Yeah.
One more question. Do you believe in love at first sight?
Oh.
Or
maybe.
Did you believe it, love? Maybe.
I don't know if I can answer that.
Why?
I don't know. I have a funny relationship with love. Well, I think the older we get, we realise what's more important.
Well, having a connection with someone who supports and trusts you and who you trust.
Definitely
so
trust.
So I don't believe in love at first sight, but I do believe in lust at first sight.
Oh, you know, I'll totally call that for Carl. Lust for sure. We're human beings
yep.
with bits that react to other bits.
Let's end it there. Thank you so much for coming in. And seriously, that your kōrero, man, it's inspiring.
Oh, thanks.
That's really
inspiring.
Thanks so much for listening to It's Personal with me, Anika Moa. A huge mihi to Chelsea Wynne-Stanley for being amazing and sharing her wairua with us. Also to the team that helps make this happen, Charlotte Purdy and Vanessa Hawken from Rogue Productions, Tim Watkin and Liz Garten from RNZ, and our audio engineers Blair Stagpool and Adrian Holley. Cole Easton-Farrelly is a video editor, and thanks to Jane Joyce for graphics and Brianna Juritich for production support. It's Personal with Anika Moa is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Don't forget to follow so you don't miss an episode.
Hey marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.